The Feast of Epiphany is actually older than Christmas. It began in the East. And there in the East, it's tied together with Baptism of the Lord. It's all one celebration. And you know, the 12 days of Christmas, if you count 12 days from December 25th to January 6th, that's 12 days. That's where that comes from. And these two feasts, they're both celebrating in many ways the same thing, namely the manifestation of the revelation of God in Christ. So we've kept all of the themes of both East and West, and so this is a multivalent celebration. And so let's just talk about several themes that are going on here. The first one is light. Isaiah says, "A light shall shine on you, Jerusalem. The rest of the nations are in darkness. Light shines on Israel." Light is illumination. Illumination is manifestation, it's revelation. All those words are interchangeable. And so the ancient pagans worshiped the sun as a god. And it's kind of natural, you can understand that. Everything depends on the light and the warmth of the sun. And if you don't know God, the real God, then you could turn the sun into a god pretty easily. But the Jews never did that. They always believed that God is the one who created the sun, and he controls it. He's the one who sets the night and the day. He's the one who sets the cycles and the seasons. It's all put in place by God. And God controls the light. And so if he wants to make it shine over Israel more than other nations, that's his prerogative to do that. And that's another symbol for the election of the Jews, that this disparate band of nobodies would be chosen by God. And all these biblical stories about people being drawn up out of nothingness, one of the points that they're always making is God is in control. God decides where the light is going to shine, where the revelation is going to happen, what's going to bring salvation to people. Okay. In the gospel, again, there's a light. It's the star. And God determines where that star is going to travel and who's going to follow it and where it's going to shine at the end of its journey, and it's right over the manger. Because Christ is the revelation par excellence. He is the fullness of revelation. There was a building of revelation through the deeds and of God, particularly the Exodus tradition, but also the prophetic word and the judges and the kings. All of Israel's history is a gradual unfolding of the revelation of God. Jews believed that that God was not made up like the pagan gods. The pagan gods were all myths, cleverly concocted myths, great literature. We still study them today, but they're made up by humans. But the point of revelation is that this is not something that the Jews invented. It was given to them, revealed to them by God. So the way we know God is partly from examining nature and you know, reveling at his creation, but primarily it comes from God revealing himself through what he does for Israel, and then ultimately he reveals himself in the Son, Jesus. Okay, second theme is royalty. There's all this talk about royalty because he's the son of David. David was promised by God that his kingdom would never end, that one would sit on his throne forever. And so the Gospels of Mark, of Matthew and Luke, they get added on these first two chapters kind of late because they want to make a big point out of Jesus being from David's line. And so the Magi coming from the east and following this star, they bring gifts for a king, gold and frankincense. And then the story is, where is this newborn king of the Jews to be born? and Herod ascertains from his seers, etc. All this talk about kingship, because Jesus is from David's line. He is the one who is going to sit on the throne of David forever. Okay, third theme is universality. Israel was not elected by God for their own sake, but for the sake of the world. And so Isaiah, in that first reading, says, "A light shall shine on you, and they will come from all the nations toward the light." It's like, maybe a bad analogy, but insects are drawn to the light. You know, everything living is drawn toward light. And so the whole world, and not just humans, but everything, everything in God's creation is returning to the light, which is its source, which is God. And the light shines most brilliantly in Christ. And so the three magi, they're foreigners. They're pagans. This doesn't come out of the Jewish tradition. This is Matthew's way of saying it's begun to happen in Christ. They're all coming. They're all streaming toward the light. And so these magi following a star symbolize that. Okay. Another theme. Gold, frankincense, and myrrh. Frankincense and gold are gifts for a king. And our liturgy in the early centuries borrowed from court ceremonials in the Roman Empire. And so processions and singing and incense, those things were all part of court ceremonial because the emperor was incensed. And so we incense our king, which is Christ. And the altar, St. Augustine says, is Christ. And so we incense the altar. And the gospel book symbolizes the word, which is Christ, and so we incense it. And we are going to share in Christ's body by sharing in the Eucharist, and so we're going to be Christ, and so we get incensed. So there again, it's the kingship, but there's a dark side to this. Myrrh is an ointment poured over and smeared over dead bodies. So the death of Christ is foreshadowed at the time of his birth. And the other day we heard from that Gospel of Luke where Simeon the prophet says to Mary, "This son of yours is going to be a sign that will be contradicted, and you yourself a sword shall pierce." In other words, there's suffering and death surrounding this bright promise of birth of a king. All kings die, but this is the king that will live on the throne of David forever. So what's the difference? It's resurrection. Because everything in creation dies. Stars are formed, and after so many light years, they die. And we know from science that some of the stars we see at night are already dead. It's just that the light hasn't stopped coming to us. Everything is born and everything dies. But in Christ, that whole thing begins to turn a corner. Death no longer has the final word. Death isn't something like everything else where it dies and then time goes on. You forget about it, it's gone. We're never going to be forgotten about. We're going to be part of the communion of saints in the same way that we understand them to be celebrating with us in this Mass. We are going to be part of them in a different way than we are now. We're already in union. You know, the whole of creation, the believers and the non-believers, everybody who hoped in Christ in their own ignorant, unknowing way, they're all part of the communion of saints. And we will be too. Because resurrection conquers death. There is no real death. There's only a passing, only a transformation into something else. So we Christians then have the courage to stand around an altar of sacrifice and remember his death. Because we're not afraid of death. We know that this story doesn't end in tragedy. It ends happily because we're going to share in the very life and glory of God. We're going to sit on that throne with him forever and ever.